This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
All right, folks, this comes to the second part of our conversation. And I've got four lovely ladies in front of me. I've got Anne Tham, who's the group CEO at Ace Adventure. I've got Melinda Lim. She's the principal of Sriyamas International School. Sumitra Nair, who's the director of youth community enablement at MDEC, as well as Dato' Mazlan Osman, our very first astrophysicist. Is that right, Dato'?
Yes.
Big round of applause.
That was a live recording that took place on the 21st of February after the screening of the movie Hidden Figures. The movie, as most of you know by now, tells the previously untold story of Katherine Johnson, Dorothy Vaughan, and Mary Jackson, three brilliant African-American women working at NASA who served as the human computers that helped put Americans into space. After that screening, I was privileged to speak with four talented Malaysian women. You heard me introducing them just now, and they're all involved in one way or another in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, otherwise known as STEM, which is the highlight of our show today. This is The Evening Edition, and I'm Umapagan Apake Pagan. In this special episode of International Women's Day, we're talking about the future of women and children in STEM right here in Malaysia.
So, ladies, before we get into the conversation at hand about, I guess, STEM and Malaysian youth and women and whether, you know, we've got the right people encouraging our children to get into this industry, I would love your take on the film. What did you think? Dato?
I knew you'd want me to start. Now, first of all, you have to know that it was almost exactly to a day, 55 years ago, that John Glenn was launched, February 20th. And today, you know, if you look at the American time, it's just about right. 55 years ago. And, you know, the excitement is never lost. And I'd say that watching that movie, I get back a lot of that excitement, being in the control room and the vibration you get when the rocket is launched and the nervousness whether your satellite's going to be deployed or not. And so 55 years ago, today is the same thing. I always say that when a rocket is being launched, the engineers no longer have any say. It's entirely up to God to make it succeed. A million and one things can go wrong. So I'd say about the movie, I find it very, very captivating. But of course, then there are the human issues, which, you know, we can talk about as well later.
Yeah. Anne?
Okay, for me, where the movie is concerned, actually, it wasn't so much about whether it was a woman thing or a colored thing. I think if anybody was able to do what they did, it would have been cause for celebration. However, having the movie made at this point in time, it's something that we allow young people today who are so used to people flying into space, you know, even now looking at hotels going out to space, to actually understand what it takes to conquer new territories. The danger that goes along with it, and the fact that these women actually did it with so much, like the obstacles were there. They literally had to climb mountains to get through, just to help. It's not even asking for anything in return, just to help and be a part of the nation building, you know, for them. I think that's amazing.
Yeah. Sumitra.
Yeah, I think, you know, the movie was definitely something that keeps you on your toes, edge of your seat kind of movie. But I found what was, you know, most valuable for me were that it was full of lessons, you know. It was full of guidance as to how do you sort of, you know, blaze that trail? How do you be the first one, whatever, right? And it's not, yes, you know, the women empowerment message came across loud and strong and loud and clear, but I think it's also almost a recipe for empowerment for anyone, you know, male, female, young person, whatever, to go to that new place and to try something new. You just have to be gutsy and you have to you know, do what it takes and not really bother about what people behind you think or say, as long as you're contributing towards something that is larger.
What was the line in the movie? Civil dissent.
It's not very civil.
For me, I found that the movie was very well made, because quite often when it's in like a biography, it tends to be very disjointed. But this was superbly made and it was so smooth. One of the things that stood out for me was we had it really easy compared to these women. The amount of obstacles they had, just one thing after another, and they made it through, you know. So it makes me very thankful for what we had. Despite the fact that I couldn't get into the university here to do my degree, I had to go across the sea into Singapore to get it done. But because I wanted to pursue engineering, yeah. So for me, the thing that really stood out was that it will be an inspiration to many people. One of the things that the character that Kevin Costner played was the ability to think that you're already there. And then let's just do it. You know?
And that was a theme that ran through, right? I mean, all of them, Dorothy, Mary, and Catherine did that. They thought she was a supervisor. She thought she was an engineer. And she thought she was, you know, part of the space group, right? Exactly. Going to the moon. And I think that was the kind of thinking that was absolutely necessary. It was well displayed in all of our major characters in that film. I'm curious about the role that pop culture has in moving our people forward. We know how well it does overseas. We know the impact and influence that these movies have on the youth in America and in the UK. But I don't think Malaysian youth, Malaysian children, both boys and girls, are exposed to enough of this sort of popular culture as a point of inspiration or motivation. Would you guys agree?
I have to disagree, because at the schools that we run, we actually built some of these movies that are inspirational into our curriculum. So shows like Coach Carter is right. Part of our whole curriculum. The Prestige is one. Okay, so these are
the little things. Great movie to show to kids. All right.
Yes, yeah. So there are little things in there that we pick up for the kids to learn from them. So there are other movies, and this one definitely will go in somewhere. We just got to figure out which subject and which curriculum to put it into.
Yeah. I think that's true, because, you know, if you look at young people, they are still influenced to a large extent by, you know, what they watch, what they read. I mean, I've heard of teenagers saying, you know, I want to do forensic science because I want, you know, they're inspired by CSI, right? So it does, and I've also met lawyers who say they were inspired by Law and Order. Right.
So I think
it still happens, you know, and I'm sure that this will inspire many, many young people, you know, whether men, women or whatever.
Anne, you look like you have something to say.
Yes, I do. Actually, I speak on behalf of people who didn't study science. out of the four seats here, I quit science at Form 4. You know, the thing about it is that it's not that I wasn't interested. I realized as an adult, I really liked to know what was, like, I really liked knowing what's going on out in space. I mean, I'm reading books like Physics of the Future, but as an adult, but believe me, when I was back in school, I hated them. So I'm speaking on behalf of a lot of people out there, because the idea of being interested in science or math, actually, it's not just a gender issue. You know, our biggest struggle is to get kids to like these dry subjects. You know, there's so many other things that seem more exciting. Why can't we make them exciting? You know, I think I may have, become an engineer.
Yeah.
But
you're an app developer. That's an engineer.
No, I'd like to follow up on this issue that interest in science is actually no longer a gender issue. It is an issue of getting young people to be interested in science. And so we've got to make science as exciting as possible, because if you're going to the future, then, you know, it's science that's going to drive a lot of that. So this whole thing about you're not liking science in school, unfortunately today, science is being taught exactly the same way. This is, you know, disastrous. But apparently, we're not able to move very much in this area. And so I'll say again that we have to review this issue, not from the gender perspective, but actually from the young people's perspective.
More about women and children in STEM in just a little bit. Stay tuned to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to the Evening Edition, and I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan. We're celebrating today International Women's Day, and we're bringing you a live panel discussion that was held last month after a special preview screening of the movie Hidden Figures. The panel featured Anne Tham, Group CEO at Ace Adventure, Melinda Lim, Principal at Sri Amas International School, Sumitra Nair, Director of Youth Community Enablement at MDEC, and Professor Dato' Mazlan Osman, Malaysia's first astrophysicist. Here, I continue my conversation with them about whether we're teaching science to children the wrong way. Have a listen.
Dr. Mazlan, in your organizations, I'm curious as to the makeup of people who apply for jobs and come to work for you, especially the scientists. I mean, we all know that women outnumber men in universities across the world, right? Is that reflected in, I guess, recruitment?
Well, I'm no longer recruiting in Malaysia, but I can tell you that it's not reflected amongst the fellows of the academy, for instance. And that's the highest level of recognition in the country right now, where you are you become a fellow of the academy. It is still an all boys club, and it's really a struggle to get women in. And even and when you go at the senior level fellow, that's even worse. But I would like to say something here because I'm the space person here, and I want a lot of us think that there's no longer an issue with women, but in the field of space, it is actually still an issue, and you know that there's only 10% of the astronauts are women.
That's right.
And so why is this so? And NASA is also examining this issue. But a lot of those emotions that you imagine those women would feel, I still feel. You know, just about, say, maybe 15 years ago when I went to the first United Nations meeting, I felt that I wasn't taken seriously because I am a woman. And, you know, the thing that leveled the field for me was the fact that I was then recruited by the UN. And at that point, I felt that I had some headway into making people believe that I have my own standing. So before that, if I had something to say from the scientific point of view, I would have to get the guys in the, say, developing countries to help me promote. Or if it was a scientific issue, I would get the guys in the more developed countries, like the US, to promote the same ideas. So I know my friends were all in the space business will say, no, Mazlan, we never felt that way about you. But what did I feel? I felt that there was some resistance because I am female. It's true.
Clear something up for me. There was the story going around about when you were at the UN. Is it true that if extraterrestrials came to Earth, you would be their first point of contact? Was that true?
Okay. Logically, you know, you just think about it. If an alien ship landed, you need to find a spokesman for humankind. Would it be like now? Would it be Trump?
Maybe not.
I don't think so. Or would it be Theresa May, just because she's the Prime Minister of the UK? No. So you need to have somebody who represents humankind, and that would be the head of the United Nations, which is now Guterres from Poland. But who is going to advise the Secretary General of the UN on, is this you've got to verify the story. You've got to have all your calculations, what happened here and all the physics involved, you know. That would be the work of my office, which is the United Nations Office for Outer Space Affairs. We are the experts advising the UN Secretary General. So which is why in the UK, they felt that the first person they had to be referred to before it went to the even the Secretary General was me. To the people in the UK, this made a lot of sense. But yes, the story that I was supposed to be the UN ambassador for aliens is true. But for very different reasons.
Yeah, just go with yes. That's great. Sumitra, I'm very curious. When it comes to youth empowerment in, what you do at MDEC, coding is, and technical language skills are part of that empowerment, right? I think the youth in 5, 10, 15 years, it's just, they're going to have to be as fluent in code as they are in English. I know MDEC's got huge plans for that. And can you tell me about, what's going on with people in STEM, young kids who are taking up STEM and the coding stuff?
Yeah, sure. I think to start with, picking up on what Dato' Mazna was saying earlier about this is not really an issue about men or women, especially I think in Malaysia with regards to STEM. It's just that there is a declining interest. And that's true. There is a declining interest in STEM when you look at the upper secondary, when you look at entrance into university programs. And we also know that there are various reasons, but one of the reasons is also because kids lose interest in schools, right? And so we need to somehow bring this excitement back. And when we look, and of course, being the organization that we are mandated to look at digital technology and how that's going to be impacting our country. And when we look at that, we see an opportunity to excite kids, right? Because if you put kids in front of a computer game, the kid gets really excited, right? And they spend tons and tons of time playing that computer game. And if you just flip it and say, hey, wouldn't it be great if you could create this? And then a light bulb kind of goes on and says, you mean I can create it, which they always take for granted. It's like those IBM machines, right? I mean, you take it for granted. You don't realize that the amount of calculations they had to make to send a person to the moon without a computer, I can't even imagine it in this day and age, right? So it's the same with a kid. You just have to switch on that light bulb. And that's what we're trying to do. So really, it's something which we started a couple of years ago. And the Prime Minister launched it. It's called the My Digital Maker Movement. And this movement is really about how do we galvanize not just the Ministry of Education, because education is education, and we all went through this, right? But it's not just the Ministry of Education. How do we galvanize people to come together to get our kids interested again in things that are technical, in things that are computational, right? And so we're not just looking at coding, but we're looking at computational thinking. It is about how do you think in a way that harnesses computing technologies, that solves problems. So that's really the focus of what we're doing.
I can't even buy clothes without a computer, let alone put a man in space. Mm-hmm. Which brings me very naturally to Anne and what you do, because we spoke about a year ago now about ChemCaper, which is this fantastic app that is a role-playing game that teaches kids chemistry. And tell me about that. And because, I mean that in itself should be, you're playing game, but it's also an inspiration to start making stuff like that.
We're dealing with kids, right? And the first thing I think that needs to go are the textbooks.
Yeah.
Okay. That is what makes it so difficult to get the kids engaged. If you really look at all the other industries and careers out there, there's so many other things that are more, a lot of other things are sexier, more exciting than what is depicted in the science books and the math books. So our first foray into changing it was, that's how ChemCaper came about. And we did it in such a way that we wanted to bypass, teachers, okay? Because the kids are generally way ahead of the teachers. And ChemCaper came about because of that. But it is quite a bit of a challenge because right now we've got to get past parents and teachers because they're not quite sure what to do with it. The first question we get asked is that, how does this relate to the textbooks?
How does this relate to the A that I want them to
get, one.
Right?
Yeah, but it is actually, it helps them get better results because we did this to fix the exam issues because textbooks, every chapter is written in such a linear fashion. All the way from, you know, year 7 or from 1 all the way to form 5. But no exam examines anybody chapter by chapter. Nobody does that. It is something that you have to link. And Melinda actually oversaw the whole thing and she said, no, it cannot go this way. So she's mixed up year 7 with year 10, 5 chapters from year 10, 2 chapters from year 7. So if it is not to get the A's, I don't know what is. Okay, it's just that it's a very unconventional way of getting the kids there. Yeah, but throw out the textbook first.
Melinda, can you talk to me very quickly about parents' reaction to this? Because I think they would be, I guess, the biggest hurdle, right?
Actually, the biggest hurdles are the teachers,
right?
Because the teachers are actually in school telling the students don't play computer games, right? And making them put aside. And you have kids who are at 2 years old already playing with the iPads, but the minute they step into school, they're not allowed to bring it to school. So that totally, you know, eliminates that whole concept of learning. And so parents, you'd be surprised that the parents who are in their 30s and 40s are actually very much into the gaming because they were gamers when they were young. So they understand what games can do for them. And the whole team that is designing the game, they grew up gaming. So they knew what it was like, you know, when they were playing RPG games, that they could remember every single thing in there, where everything was located, what every which item can exchange for something else. So that's why we chose RPG for Camp Gaper, and we infused it all with chemistry. So the students are going to be picking up chemistry without even realizing it. So the only time that they're going to realize it is when they're going into class, and the teachers are teaching these concepts, and they're going to go, oh, I already know that. You know, that's basically what we aim to do.
Can I add something here? You'll be happy to know that this game won the PICTA Award at Taiwan, and we beat 17 other countries for best e-learning. So this is coming from people in the industry, both business and even the computer industry, game industry, and they see that this is much needed. Now we just need to get it out, you know, and get it down to teachers who will accept something like this. The other thing is this game is being evaluated in Finland. Yes, and we'll be getting a stamp very soon because a number of the things that we've done is actually pretty much aligned with the direction that Finnish education is going towards. So this is really cool for us because I think we are a little ahead of our time in, I guess, this region of Asia. It's not just Malaysia. And yes, our young team, they were here just now, and one is left, the designers and the narrative writers for the story.
We're heading for the news now, but when we come back, the discussion continues about whether the arts makes for a formidable yet complementing asset when learning science. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition, and I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan. Last month, courtesy of our good friends over at 20th Century Fox, we arranged a special screening of the movie Hidden Figures. The movie is based on the best-selling book by Margot Lee Shetterly and tells the never-before-told story of three mathematically and technologically gifted African-American women who must cope with racism and sexism while working at NASA to put Americans in space. After the movie, we recorded a live panel discussion with four Malaysian women, all torchbearers in the field of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, otherwise known as STEM. I spoke to them about whether STEM held a future for women here in the country, and the conversation naturally turned towards educating our kids and keeping them interested in science. These women are Anne Tham, Group CEO at Ace Adventure, Melinda Lim, Principal at Sri Amas International School, Sumitra Nair, Director of Youth Community Enablement at MDEC, and Dato' Mazlan Osman, Malaysia's first astrophysicist.
Folks, that's enough of me yapping. They're here to answer your questions as well, as I'm sure you must have questions. So just prep your hands and ask away. And some of you are all the way up there, so I will run up with the mic if I absolutely must. Fabian?
I'm right here. I have so many questions. I'm so sorry. It's an honor to meet you, Doctor. It's been following your amazing. Thank you. So thank you for being there. I believe that in this movie, so I just wanted to relate this to the movie, they had two wars. They had the war that they were fighting against the Russians, and then they had that war internal with like the race problem. Actually, the word race can apply in this. They were racing to space, and they had a racial issue internally as well. Now, when it comes to education here, I believe that, so just to give you an anecdote, like Einstein, for example, was really bad, but was not that good at math, right? So I believe there is a problem, there is an educational problem, but there is a communication problem. Because no matter how you turn out this, mathematics is still very, very important. When you develop games, it's using the same physics, it's using mathematics. So how do you make this more accessible to everybody? That's exactly, you know, what you're doing right now. So kudos to you. But do you think the situation has changed here in Malaysia compared to 55 years ago with the problem outside and the problem inside?
Can I say first thing about Einstein not being good in maths? He wrote all the equations for the general relativity. He was not good in the maths that was taught in the school. But he was brilliant at maths, so there's two different things, you know. And having said that, we're talking about throw away the textbooks and then somehow you were still relating to exams. To me, textbooks is not the problem because you could write fantastic textbooks because I send my children to international IB program at the Vienna International School. She had lovely textbooks. But the trick is not to have those standardized exams. And once you get away from that and, you know, evaluate the child in a different way, you see them perform differently. Can I just say one more minute? Because now we're saying about boys not doing well academically, blah, blah, blah. Actually, the reason why it's happening is because boys do not perform well under exams, you know. Girls maybe do, because girls can do it better. But if you can change the way we evaluate children, or boys and girls, before they go to university, I am confident the boys will come up there. This is what I feel.
I'd just like to add to what Dato was saying. You know, that's so true. You know, we recently ran a bit of an experiment. We took 10 kids to Silicon Valley. Right. And these are the most, what we found to be some of the most innovative young makers, digital makers.
How old were they?
Teenagers, right? And we actually built into the selection process a sort of a weightage on their social background. So we didn't pick the kids that came from the best schools. We picked kids that had some kind of an underprivileged background, you know, either economically, family background, demographically, right? And, you know, Prof is, Dato is absolutely correct, because when we brought these kids, we had kids whose parents were security guards, lorry driver, single mom janitor, you know, and they went and they pitched to Silicon Valley entrepreneurs and VCs. And I'm telling you that there were kids there that when we first started on the program couldn't speak English, right? And some of them came away. I mean, I sat in the back of the room listening to the comments like a fly on the wall. But the comments that they gave, not in front of the kids, but they were blown away by the communication skills of these kids. And these are kids who don't speak perfect English, but yet they were able to articulate the ideas in a way that impressed these venture capitalists and these entrepreneurs, which tells you, and it was not about book learning. It was about creating. It was about finding solutions. So we had kids that came up with, you know, and I remember these kids from up in Bukit Mertajam, you know, north, and they were from a band six school, right, which is the worst school. And they came out and with this creation which reminds you to drive with both hands on the steering wheel, you know, and whenever you took your hands off to answer a phone or whatever, the wheel, it would automatically slow down your car. You know, there was this gadget or something that they had dreamed up. And so it's possible, you know. And yes, sometimes the education system may not allow it, and standardized testing may not allow it, but that's where we need to create as many opportunities as possible for these kids to go out and pursue what they're really interested in, because then, you know, you find that when they're passionate about something, there's no barrier to it.
Okay, I'm trying to tackle two things here, yeah? One is, you know, what Professor Maslan talked about, and also that the 50-year gap thing. The thing about, if you watch the movie, the reason why this movie was even made or the book was even written was that these women were part of history and they were part of something so powerful, launching a man into space and onto the moon. So the point is that we are interested in them because of the end. It's what they have done, the outcomes. So when I talked about throwing out the textbooks, it's not about not learning. It's about looking at the end. What is it that kids are going to get excited about? What is it that they really like? And then we work backwards and get them interested. Whereas the books go the other way. They start from the foundation. Okay, they look at what has happened, right? The exciting thing that has happened. But in the books, they always, always start with the basic. And the basic is the most boring part. Who really wants to know that? Not at the very beginning. We only look at the basic when we know the outcomes. So it has to go like the movie. At the end, get the kids interested in what is exciting and work backwards. This is how the textbook should be written, or the introduction to, let's say, the sciences or whichever subject should start with the end. That's what I'm trying to say. The problem with learning is that it hasn't changed in 50 years. We always start with the basic. And nobody was interested in who they were, where they were born, you know, which city they came from. We became interested because of what they have done. Then we want to find out where they came from.
I'm back here. We've got two questions up here. I'll take them both and then you can answer them.
Hi. I'd like to go back to Dr. Maslan's point about the Science Academy being an all-male club, okay, or a boys' club. Mm. Is there a way around it? How do you break into something like that? And is that much different from the UN Outer Space Agency, for example, which is considered an all-boys' club as well? Do you have any suggestions of how this can be changed?
Okay, this is about how you get women onto, say, a position in management or even into the, in your question, into the academy. This goes back to, because we have to face the fact that most, in those high positions, especially in Malaysia, they're all men. And so I normally encourage women that, you not only look for mentors, because a mentor is somebody who will tell you what career, how you should go about in your career and land where you want to go. But they should be looking at sponsors. By sponsors, people or the men in your organization who will pull you up and suggest your name for top management positions, for instance. And sponsorship is what you need for those fellows in the academy to nominate their women, their women peers, and that's the only way to solve that problem. As I said, you do not apply to be a member of the academy. You can only be nominated by somebody already in the academy. Of course, when you have more women in the academy, hopefully they are more conscious of the fact of bringing other women, and hopefully that will snowball. But it's about sponsorship that you need. Now, in the UN, or the UN is a perfect employer to me, because they give so much leeway for everybody, male or female, to enjoy a work-life balance. You know, nothing happens in the weekends. We don't call meetings in the weekends. Compared to here, we have meetings every weekend, and I die, you know. But in the UN, the weekends are sacrosanct for families, and they don't encourage, you know, you to, if you're a boss, you're not encouraged to have meetings past 6:30 or something like that, because you have to respect work-life balance. And this is what is missing in our, you know, in Malaysia right now. Some are becoming quite aware of this, but it's still missing.
It leads me very nicely to my next question over here, which will be our last question for the evening, because I think they need the cinema for another screening very shortly. Mm. But Gray.
Hi, I'm Gray. I'm the head of arts at the British Council. So we have four really great STEM advocates in front of us. But I was just wondering where you feel the arts play in what you guys are doing. Because the fact is we're watching this film about STEM. Film is an art form. And there's, you know, game developers. There are, you know, essentially it's art. So I was wondering where you guys feel, whether it's STEM or whether it's actually A should be in there, whether it should be STEAM. So we'll be curious to find out your reactions. Thank you.
My response to you is that there is no way you can segregate arts from the sciences and the maths. Yeah. So when we created the game, we had teachers who were scientists. I mean, the chemistry teachers who took care of that. But the whole storyline, the whole drawing and everything could not have been possible if not for the artists. And then, of course, we needed the technical side of things to program the whole thing. So just the making of the game alone, there was no way it could, the STEM could have been done without the arts. Yeah. So maybe I just share a little bit about our school. What we do within our school is that we've actually worked in very creative elements within the science and the math subjects. Actually, throughout every single subject that we do and every single year, we've infused very creative activities in there. So our students, despite being very science-oriented or maths-oriented, they already have all these skills to be creative, to come up with ideas, to be innovative. So it is necessary to infuse the two. There's no way you can have one without the other.
To give you a bit of an example, the students do sing songs in the chemistry classes. Right now, in math classes, they debate math. And the other thing that goes on is that soon the students are going to do dance in the sciences. Okay? Just to do the arts, where you bring arts together with science. So yes, it is important.
I mean, I definitely agree that it's actually more of a STEAM than rather than a STEM, you know. And I think more and more people are moving that way. I think it was it Steve Jobs who once said that, you know, Apple is not made up of just great programmers, but great musicians, great artists, historians who happen to know how to program too. So the two must coexist. I think that's also why if you look at today's, you know, with a lot of digital technologies, design is a huge part of everything that happens. So that's also something that we should be encouraging as we move forward.
I'm all for the arts, fusing the arts and the sciences, but whether it's STEAM or STEMD, you know, a lot of acronyms. But there's a very simple reason why you have to include the arts, because we value creativity. You talk to anybody, they talk about creativity. How do you engender creativity in the class? It's not through chemistry or, in my case, physics, but through dance and art. So you have no choice. Once you talk about creativity, then you have to expose our children to, you know, what it means to be artistic and to be expressing yourself in other ways, you know, in as many ways as possible. It's a no-brainer to me, you know, the arts and the sciences. So when people talk about STEM, sometimes I get a bit agitated because I believe strongly in STEAM. But yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm up here. Before I get you to say thanks to our honored guests, I just want to end with one quick comment. If you could just introduce yourself as well.
Hi, my name is Sherry. I'm a teacher. And what I found really interesting about this film is completely off topic to what we've been talking about, was the dress code in the film and how she had to wear heels to work every day, running back and forth to the toilet in heels. 2016, I finished my contract as a teacher. 2016, in my contract, it said, as a teacher, I must wear heels to work. So it's important to see how far we've gone, but also to know that we have a long way to go still.
Folks, I'd like you to give a... Well, you know, because there's no such thing as a free lunch, so I made these lovely ladies work for it. I'd like you to give them a big round of applause.
And that was a panel discussion I had with Anne Tham, Group CEO at Ace Adventure, Melinda Lim, Principal at Sri Amas International School, Sumitra Nair, Director of Youth Community Enablement at MDEC, and Dato' Mazlan Osman, Malaysia's first astrophysicist. A big thank you to them for coming out to watch a movie with us and contributing to an interesting conversation after that. If you think today's show would resonate with someone you know, you can tell them to listen to the podcast on our BFM app. All they have to do is download the app, and they can do that by heading to the Apple App Store or Google Play. Happy International Women's Day from all of us here. This is Uma Pagan Ampike Pagan signing off for the evening edition BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.